So you guys have your first report of the semester due tomorrow by 5 p.m. Any questions about that guy? None at all. Okay, make sure I get a PDF properly named. Copy your teammates on the submission email. CC them when you submit it. I need one submission per team. Just make sure everybody's copied on that message. Make sure you follow the naming format. Make sure it's in my mailbox by 5 p.m. I'll go by the timestamp on the email. Okay, 5:01 is late. That's the fairest way I can enforce. And we'll kind of, you'll see that throughout the semester. That's the fairest way we can enforce rules, even when it comes to the final contest, is to enforce them. Okay. So today we're going to talk about the kind of next part of the design process concept, generation and evaluation. We'll take the first few minutes to kind of review the tools we talked about on Tuesday. Then we'll talk about the tools that help you both generate and then evaluate different designs to satisfy the customer, the engineering specs that you develop from your customer requirements. So that'll be the first part of class today. The second part of class today, we're actually going to introduce your second mini project. I posted the teams for that just a little while ago. And then we'll outline the kind of timeline for that project. That's going to be our next couple of weeks working on that project. And that will be essentially going through this design process for a paper-only design. We won't build anything for this next project, but we'll go through this whole design process. All right? So let's review the phases of design. Where do we start? Problem understanding, right? And that includes who's the customer and what do they want. Are we going to have just one customer? No. Right. Are our customers going to do a good job of telling us what they want? Probably not. Are they going to have conflicting requirements? Probably so. Even the same customer probably has requirements that conflict with one another. Okay. So when we talk about defining our customer, understanding our customer, we mean some aggregate customer. It's kind of a summary, some mishmash of all our customers, all the people that care about what our product looks like and what functions like, right? So we've understood our, kind of understand the problem at hand. What do we do with that information? What's next? Heard somebody say it, I think. Yeah, specification development. So we take those customer requirements and the engineering characteristics that come out of that and actually start developing engineering specifications for each one of those requirements. Right, and we talked through, oh, our customer said they want a fast car. Well, that means they want high acceleration or high top speed. And okay, well, that means top speed greater than 160 miles an hour or whatever. Yeah. Those are engineering specs. Those will all have numerical targets. The next phase is actually what largely we're going to talk about today, is conceptual design. So that's taking those specs, those customer requirements, those functional requirements, which actually we'll talk through at the very beginning of the day, and developing what most people think of as the design process, sketching things out, coming up with ideas of how I can solve the problem, the actual mechanical design, if you will. Okay. What's after conceptual design? Actual design? Detailed design. So I take my conceptual design, my ideas effectively. I mean, it's a little bit more than an idea. It should be more fleshed out than just an idea. But you haven't really thought about, oh, exactly what size bolt do I need? Exactly what alloy, metal do I need? I know this probably needs to be aluminum. What type of aluminum should it be? Right? That's the stuff that comes in here. I know I need a brushed DC motor. Okay, exactly what brushed DC motor do I need? And that's detailed design. Okay. After we do detailed design, then progressing along, it might need to go out for production. Right, and that's even another step of refinement, dealing with your manufacturer, right? What's it going to take to get it built? Okay, the actual manufacturer. And then we want to consider disposal as part of this process, too. Okay. Is this a linear process? No, right? We're going to iterate on these things. We talked about kind of 4 and 5 being stuff you might see in machine design, right? And then we're largely dealing with the first 3 in this particular class. Right, we get to conceptual level design. Functionality, how should this design work? We're not really going to talk about how should I choose the exact size bolt that I need. We're not going to talk about how do I choose what alloy of aluminum I actually want to use. Okay. We're talking about conceptual level of things. So we talk really the first three steps. And like we said, the entire process is iterative. And again, today we're going to focus largely on the top three, but we'll review a few of the tools first. Okay. Problem understanding, really we have that problem understanding form, right, which is kind of the middle part of the house of quality. Okay. Specification development, we have the spec sheet we talked about. We'll talk about another tool in just a few minutes called the function tree. So the function, the specification sheet, you can think about that as specifications or what the design has to be. The function tree, you can kind of think about it as specifying what the design has to do. Okay. So it's a slight distinction. They're both kind of specifications, but the specification sheet is what it has to be. Function tree, what it has to do. Actions it has to take, be able to take. Then in the conceptual design, we'll talk about a morphological chart, which leads directly from the function tree. And then how do we evaluate designs once we have ideas? Right? And we do include the actual evaluation as part of the design process. You get here, you're not done yet. Right? We need an objective way to evaluate, and then quite often I'll end up bouncing back up here and, oh, I missed some functions and we're not, our designs are not performing well enough. So you keep looping. Okay? And again, the entire process is iterative. Meaning it's not make a house of quality and then I'm done with it. Right? That house of quality is a living document. You want to revisit that regularly. Same with the spec sheet. Same with the function tree. Same with the actual evaluation matrices. These are part of the design process. I want to stress that. Okay, problem understanding form we saw was the middle part of the house of quality. Right? And this left-hand column of that house of quality, it's kind of a listing of what my aggregate customer wants. Okay, and those need to be unambiguous and well-defined. And you'll see that's going to become important because we're going to use this exact list in our concept evaluation. And those engineering characteristics are measurable characteristics of a design. Right? So we talked about one way to think about this is giving a listing of customer requirements. If someone sets a design on the table in front of you, what could you measure or test about that design to know whether it's satisfying these customer requirements or not? Okay. Those are the engineering characteristics. Okay. And then we look in the middle of how those two things relate. Go through this quickly. We've already talked about that. Really want to take about each one of those customer requirements and really, again, get to an unambiguous meaning for your customer requirement. We talked about ease of use. Well, what does that mean? That's going to mean something very different from one design to the next. Okay. So we need to really get what the customer really wants in the kind of examples we went through here. Okay. And then basically what you can do to get to your engineering characteristics, once you've worked really hard and have a nice list of customer requirements, just go down that list one by one. Okay, what would I need to measure to know whether I met this or not? And it's going to be three or four things probably. Go to the next customer requirement. What would I need to measure or test about a design to know whether I'm meeting this customer requirement or not? There's your next three or four engineering characteristics. Okay? So you can walk just down your list of customer requirements that way and generate engineering characteristics. Okay. And again, you should revisit regularly. That correlation matrix is the roof of the house of quality. Okay. What does that do for us? What? Yeah, it shows the relationship between those different engineering characteristics. And in particular, basically, how do improvements towards the goal in one engineering characteristic affect our ability to improve towards the goal in others? So we talked, maybe we have, you know, battery capacity and phone volume were the kind of example we did. Right. If I want to increase my battery capacity, let's push that towards its goal, it's going to make it harder to push my phone volume size, not sound, smaller towards its goal of minimizing it. So we look at the relationship between these two characteristics, ends up being there. And we use kind of pluses and minuses to indicate that. Okay. From those engineering characteristics, we developed a spec sheet. We had categories of requirements. Make sure you are sorting your requirements according to those categories. Okay. Engineer characteristics tell us what we can measure. The spec sheet's going to tell us what we want those measurements to be, what they have to be to satisfy government regulations, company regulations, right? Design constraints, okay, engineer, they come from your engineering analysis, except. Right. So those get sorted down the middle. Okay. What's that D or W column? Demand slash want or wish, right? So what's the difference between those two for, in this case? I'm not quite that strong. I think a demand, you're on the right track for sure. I mean, and the language suggests exactly that. A demand, you want to think is kind of a drop dead requirement. Right. If I don't satisfy this demand, the design is done. Doesn't matter how great it is at everything else. The design's done. Right. So our example, we have too much poison in your coffee, that's a dead product. You can't sell that. Or whatever, right? A want or wish is, yeah, something could be nice to hit, but a lot of times it's a little bit stronger than that. Right? It is a spec. It is something we should be hitting with every design we develop, but the design is not illegal or completely, you know, against the rules or against the law or against our company policy. It's not a dead product if we don't satisfy that customer requirement. That makes some sense? Okay. So don't think about, you know, like I said, it's a wish here, and the language suggests, oh, it'd just be nice if we could do that. It's not quite that. Okay, it's a little bit stronger than that. We should be aiming to satisfy that. And we want to consider that as a spec. It's just that there is this kind of another layer of hard boundaries on our design. That if we cross that line, the product is dead. Okay. On the rightmost column, we have the source, right? So what's the source of each one of those requirements or specs? Right, this could be government regulations. Again, they could be internal company regulations. They could be some engineering analysis that you did that tells you what speed things have to move at or what forces you have to be able to generate, that kind of thing. Okay. Generally going to have somebody or some team, sub-team of your design process responsible for ensuring a design satisfies a spec, and you want to keep track of changes. Yes, sir?
In this class, would the source be mostly the rules you give us for the projects?
The source, you will have a lot of requirements that are just the rules, right? But I think there should be an equal number that are from kind of engineering analysis, design analysis, right? Because the rules set up just demands here, right? The demands, the rules are not going to tell you anything about what it takes for that product to be successful. They're just going to tell you the minimum things it has to do in order to not be illegal in terms of the contest or in terms of the design we're talking about, right? So you should have a lot of specs here. These are specs not just, again, to be a legal design or a feasible design. These are specs that you think it's going to take to, you're going to have to require, your design is going to have to satisfy in order to be successful. So in that context, you have probably a lot more wants and wishes than demands. Right? The demand's going to set the hard boundaries in your solution space, if you will. Your wants or wishes are probably some subset of them. Okay. And I won't really go through this in much detail, but basically the same slide as last week. You want to make sure that every one of those targets is a numerical target. Right? Every spec, every requirement in that spec sheet better have a number associated with it. Okay? And the reason you do that, because that can turn into effectively a check on the designs you're developing. I have an alternative concept. I have an idea. I can run down that spec lead. Does it satisfy this? Yes. Does it satisfy that? Yes. Does it satisfy this one? Yes. Oh, it doesn't do this. How can we change it in order to make sure we're satisfying that specification? And you can't do that unless you have hard numerical targets. Can't do that unambiguously, let's say, if you don't have hard numerical targets. So there we go. We just talked through all that. Okay. Questions about what we saw on Tuesday? That's kind of where we got to on Tuesday. House of quality, function tree, or spec sheet. Okay. Let's talk about the function trees. This one, of the tools tends to give students the most trouble. At least students in here, maybe they get better by seeing your design, but I think I'm going to try to do better and help you guys out. So the function tree, the objective of the function tree is to break some large, difficult task, right, into smaller, more manageable ones. And by doing so, make it so I can design for each one of these small pieces, and I can come up with ideas very easily, and those are really much easier design problems for me. So, designing a system to move a person from point A to point B, I don't want to say car because it doesn't have to be a car, but something like that, that's a really hard design problem, right? Designing a latch for entry into the system is a kind of easy design problem, right? And that's what we kind of want to go, right? We don't want to go, you know, our main product function, send human being to the moon, right? That's a really hard problem to solve, right? Latch the, or measure the fuel capacity. That's a much easier problem to solve, right? And if we've done our function tree in the right way, solving each one of those small problems together gets us to the big solution in the same way. All right? So the function tree, we want to take our main product function, and basically just break that down. So in this case, I've only shown three. There are generally going to be way more than three. So this is the main thing I want my product to do. And then I go down next level. What's all the things it has to do in order to satisfy that main function? And I'm one level down. Okay. And what we're saying here is if I do subfunction 1, 2, and 3, then I will have achieved my main product function. Okay. There's nothing else I need to do in order to do that. Just those three things. Okay, with me so far? So, if I only had one drop-down thing, like if I didn't have subfunction 1 or 3, what is that telling you about what we would have so far? Exactly. So if I didn't have these two things, right? If I only had one drop-down subfunction, what you're saying, when you see a function tree like that, is that those two things are equal, right? And what that's really probably saying to you, if you're looking at it in part of your design process, is I really haven't thought about this clearly enough. Okay, I'm probably have some other stuff here that's implied, maybe. I'm just assuming that other stuff happens. Make it explicit. That's what a lot of these tools are about in this class, in this design process, is making this thought process of the design objective, clarified, and explicit. Okay. The other really common one, particularly in this class, if you see like a single drop down, is you've transitioned into flow chart mode. Right? This is not a flow chart. Right? What we'll see is these levels are by complexity, not by time. We'll come back to that one. So then I say, hey, if I've satisfied these three subfunctions, if I can do these three things, then I will have achieved the main subfunction, the main function of the design. Okay. Well, you probably can guess that, hey, you're going to keep doing that, going smaller and smaller and smaller. Right. So what we're saying here, and again, this is a teaching example. This is way smaller than what you'd normally see. What you should be developing. What we're saying here, for subfunction 1, if I do these three things, and only these three things, then I will have achieved subfunction 1. Okay. If I do these two things, and only those two things, I will have achieved subfunction 2. If I do these three, and only those three, I will have achieved subfunction 3. Okay. So what that means is if I do these 8 things, right, I will have done these 3 subfunctions, which means I will have achieved my main product function. Yes, sir?
Where do you reach like the bottom of these trees? Like, where do you start to
look for? So you want to keep going and keep going. And basically, you want to come down to a point where these sub-functions you get to, and again, it will generally be more layers, where these things are almost trivially easy to design for. Right? You want to be able to look at one of these sub-functions and come up with 10 ways to do that right off the top of your head. Okay? So for a lot of designs in this class, maybe move forward, move backwards, turn left, turn right. Right, I can come up with 10 ways to move forward right off the top of my head. I can roll, I can drive, I can use tank tracks, I can jump, I can walk, I can fly. Right, those are really easy things for me to do. Right, get to some target on the desert, which we'll talk about in a little while, is a hard thing to do. So that's the kind of clue. If you get to a point where you can just rattle off ways to solve the problem, you're kind of getting pretty close. And that's what you want. Each one of these things where you can just rattle off 8, 10 ways to solve it pretty easily. Okay. And again, this is smaller than what you're going to need. These levels, again, are by complexity. These are not time ordered. Okay, so that's a really common mistake. Don't make that mistake. One sec. Right. These functions don't necessarily have to come. They're not after that one. They're having to occur to achieve the one above it. Yes, sir. Until you get to trivially easy way. So there's no set number of levels that you need to get to. All right. You just want to keep pushing, keep thinking about it until I get to a level where I know how to design for that. I can solve that problem really easily. I can buy a product from McMaster Car that's going to do that for me.
Right. Yeah.
No, this is your design tool. All right, so what we're going to do as a preview to the next tool is if we get down to these sub-functions and I figure out, hey, I can do each one of these in 10 different ways, then probably some of you are already thinking, well, how do I choose which of those 10 I'm going to do? Right. So we want to get rid of the, we have low level and we have an N of those sub-functions and 10 ways to do each one. We have an enormous number of combinations that we can put together to solve the problem. So that's part of the functionality is make that explicit in those combinations and have a way to look at them and pick out ones that are advantageous or be able to easily discard the ones that are conflicting. Okay. Let's walk kind of down the chart one more time or maybe start walking up. One way you can check for this, right? Again, if I do only these three things, and nothing else, I will have done this thing. That's a check. And that's how we'll check when we're kind of looking at your reports and things like that. If I do only these three things and nothing else, I will have achieved the one before. These functions, what goes in those blocks, make sure that what's in those blocks is something the device, the design, is capable of doing. They're action verbs that end up in those blocks. Move forward, turn right, turn left. Sense location. Calculate distance to target. Those are kind of actions it has to take. Okay. Those levels, as we said, represent complexity, not time ordering. And the functions are not solution specific. These are functions that any alternative design you come up with has to satisfy in order to satisfy the customer requirements. So for example, shouldn't have something like move an arm 180 degrees. This is an idea. This is a solution of principle for how to rotate something. So solution specific functions don't show up in these function trees. This is a problem level function tree. Functions that any design you come up with has to satisfy. All right. They also shouldn't be kind of constraints or specs. If you end up with kind of be verbs, be smaller than, be bigger than, those are specs. They belong in a spec sheet. Okay. That's not something it has to do. This is not an action, right? These are things it has to do, actions it has to take. Okay. You see these. These belong in the spec sheet. Yes, sir.
So would a function be like, for that move on 20 degrees, would like a function be more, like have a range of mobility of 180 degrees?
Well, it kind of depends on what you're trying to do when you're moving the arm. It's kind of hard to say.
Yeah.
But you mean you're already noticing 180 degrees, you know, rotate output 180 degrees, right? So something like that, right? That's something that whether you're using an arm or a turntable or a tanked track thing that can rotate 180 degrees to make the thing turn, really the objective is, maybe if we're thinking about it that way, to move something 180 degrees. What you don't want to say is we're going to use an arm to do it. Right? We haven't said, we're not picking ideas yet. Right? An arm may be a way to do it, and that'll come up in just a second. But remember, these functions you have here in this function tree are solution neutral, we say. They're not prescribing a solution. Any idea you come up with has to satisfy all these functions. Other questions? Okay, so what's some kind of tips to figure this out? Start by listing what your main function of your device or your design needs to be. Right? So maybe the main function is to win the final contest at the end of the semester, right? Or maybe you're designing some kind of laundry folding robot. So the main objective is to fold washed laundry. I don't know, right? You take that and you need to expand out, okay, if I'm going to fold washed laundry, what are the things I'm going to need to accomplish in order to fold a pile of washed laundry? And you can kind of start brainstorming maybe what those might be. Right? I might need to find where the pile of laundry is. I probably need to move towards the pile of laundry in some way. Okay. I probably need to fold each piece of the laundry in the pile. Right? These are really high-level sub-functions that you could think, okay, what am I going to have to do? And we are, in this case, when you're thinking of these functions that the thing has to do, it can be helpful to think chronologically, right? When we're just looking at, when we put it into the in the function tree, however, we don't organize it chronologically. Okay. So if I'm, so from this case, and I kind of did it here, if I'm talking about a robot that's going to fold laundry, okay, what are all the steps it's going to have to take to fold the laundry and put it in a pile to put away? And you can think through the functions there. Okay, maybe it's something that starts to look like this. And then each one of those steps become equal level subfunctions in your function tree. Okay. And then you take each one of those kind of high level, highest level subfunctions and expand it further. Okay. And you think about, well, what's everything I need to do in order to accomplish this subfunction now? So you kind of repeat that process. And again, you could think chronologically about it, right? So if I have for fold each piece of laundry, probably need to recognize what kind of laundry is in the pile. Right? I probably need to calculate the type of laundry. Right? Recognize each piece. Okay, this is a pair of pants, this is a shirt, whatever. Right? These are socks. I probably need to calculate something like, okay, get some estimate of how many pieces of things are there in this pile that I'm gonna have to fold. Probably plan some kind of folding order. Right? Be able to move towards each individual laundry piece. To interface with that laundry piece. Pick it up, move it in some way. Right? Calculate the folding algorithm. You fold pants differently than you fold shirts. Right? So I have to be able to calculate that algorithm. Right? Et cetera, et cetera. Right? And the challenge here is to not make assumptions in this process. If you're folding laundry, you're not thinking through it this way. Right? You're just picking up stuff and folding it. Right? You have to try to back out, okay, if I'm going to design something to do this, what are all of the intermediate steps I'm actually thinking about and I don't have to think about it anymore just because I've done it a ton of times. Okay. We're really good at doing stuff kind of on autopilot and not really thinking about what all the little individual steps are. So I think that's part of the problem here with the function tree is breaking out of that and thinking really clearly about what has to happen in order to satisfy each level of subfunction. Right. Then you have this list, right? So that's the next level down under fold each piece of laundry. Now we have n different subfunctions there. Now we take, as you can imagine, each one of these. What do I need to do explicitly in order to say, let's move to individual laundry piece? Okay, I have my robot, my system is here, laundry piece is over there. What do I need to actually do every step to get from where I am to where the laundry is, right? I probably need to know what's around me. I don't run into anything on the way to the laundry. Identify what any obstacles are. Is it just other pieces of laundry? Is it something I could move out of the way? Right? Is it something that's moving? Is it a person? Right? I probably need to figure out what the orientation of the piece of laundry is, right? In order to know where to grab it or how to start folding it. Right? Then, given all that, I probably need to calculate what the actual trajectory of the system is to move towards that laundry and get into the right orientation, right? Et cetera, et cetera. Okay. So really, the function tree, I think, takes some effort in trying to back out and think really clear about what are all the little steps. And there's way more than you probably think there are to make stuff happen. It becomes particularly important if you're, you know, we're talking about a robot right now. If I have to write the code to do this, I'm going to have to write every one of these little steps, right? But breaking it into these, each one of these little steps makes it doable, right? And makes it reusable, right? Maybe I have a robot that I can sense the surrounding environment to fold laundry. I could also use that same algorithm to vacuum the laundry room. Yes, sir. Yeah, of course. You'd have to, I mean, you have to think about, if you're writing the code for this, you have to think about the higher level. But each one of these, you know, is a function or class of functions. So then I take each one of those things and then, right, even though I thought about it chronologically, I put it back into my complexity. So that first level we had is there, and the next level, and the next level. And again, when you get to that lower level, you want to think about that lower level. If you've done your job, this is the complete list of really simple, kind of trivial things that you have to accomplish in order to achieve the main product function. Okay. Questions about function trees? Yes, sir. Well, what's the main product function, the overall product function, design function? So for us, that was, you know, fold, wash laundry. Okay, and then that example we just worked through, what are all the things then I have to do to achieve folding, wash laundry? So you can imagine that these get kind of large, right? You can also maybe imagine that some of these lower level subfunctions are probably going to be repeated in different places, right? And that's okay. You want to repeat them. Keep them on separate branches of the tree, right? That's going to become helpful and obvious, and we're going to be able to utilize that in our next step of the process. We want to have those explicitly, even if they are repeated, explicitly there, so we can see that things are repeated and then use that to our advantage in when we're developing ideas. Other function tree questions? Okay. Let's take a minute then in class together. I'll let you guys get a start on it on your own. Let's do a function tree for what I'm calling a coffee making, and maybe I should have called it a coffee delivering robot. Okay. And what we want, basically, if you can kind of picture it, is a system. This robot takes coffee shop type orders, right? Whether you like soy milk and fake sugar and all, whatever, right? Takes those orders somehow, and then delivers that resulting drink to someone in their office, at their desk. And that could be inside an office. Actual office, it could be inside a cubicle farm or whatever. Yes, sir.
Is that two separate main functions?
I'm trying to help to clarify and make sure we're all thinking about what the robot is specifically.
Okay.
Yeah. But you can maybe think having to take those orders is probably a subfunction. Right? Delivering them is probably some kind of subfunction too. Right? And there's probably a lot more. There is a lot more. Okay. So let's take a minute. You guys maybe get started on your own. We'll come back together and talk about it as a group. So the question was, are the branches on the function tree different solution paths, different solution alternatives? Sure. So I think I get what you're saying. So what you're talking about, so I think, let me see if I can generalize. Should the function tree have different solution alternatives embedded in it? Is that what you're asking mostly? Right? No. Should be solution neutral. So remember, this function tree you're generating, the function trees we generate are functions that any design solution has to satisfy. Right? It's just like, think of it as a functional spec sheet. Right? The spec sheet, we, as we develop it, are things that any design that's satisfying the customer requirements has to satisfy. The function tree is just the functional equivalent of that. If I'm going to satisfy the customer requirements, these are all the things that any design has to do in order to satisfy those requirements. Okay, so let's talk about this a bit. So we have this coffee making, coffee delivery robot thing we're talking about. Okay, so first kind of question, how can we summarize the main function? What's the main functionality of this system, of this product, of this design? Okay, robot barista, is that a function? Is that something it has to do? Does it have to do a robot barista? Right? No.
A robot functioning as a barista?
Okay, what does that mean? That's what we're kind of asking for, right? So, it's not just serving the coffee, though. It's delivering the coffee, and it's having not even just delivering the coffee. It's something like delivering coffee according to order or something like that, specific order. Or delivering ordered coffee, right? So maybe our main function, and it's worthwhile taking a minute if you're in this process to think about, okay, how can I work? What is the main functionality of the thing, right? And again, that's a large part about what a lot of these design tools are about, are making kind of our internal implicit assumptions and thoughts about the process and the product explicit and objective, if we can, right? Turning a gut-driven design process into an engineering process, we're trying to do. So, and in our problem description, we say it has to deliver somewhere in an office building, some kind of office worker.
It was specified.
Well, it said we had to take an order, right? Those were kind of additional bounds on the problem I wanted you guys to think about. But it said I had to take an order, so we kind of have that here, and then it's delivering an ordered coffee. It's not just delivering random coffee to people. And it's delivering, you know, kind of what we're saying there, and we could probably word it better if we thought about it more, and probably should refine this over time, right, as we think about it more. It's delivering coffee and delivering the coffee that was ordered to the person that ordered it, right, in a reasonable time frame and all these different things. It probably will, but we want to have this main function worded in a way so that it does convey what the total functionality of the design is. Right. Well, it's in order to deliver ordered coffee, it has to produce it at some point. Right. So this first high-level function, again, we're trying to just summarize what the main overall function of this design is. And then, yeah, we're going to get to sub-functions in 30 seconds about, okay, what are all the things I have to do in order to achieve that? Right. But you do probably want to spend a minute or more, as we're doing, thinking about how can I word this high-level sub-function so that it captures everything this design has to do, without it being a paragraph of things. Right. Okay, so if that's our highest level function, what are our next level of functions?
Take an order.
Brew coffee. I'm just taking these down right now. We'll talk about them in detail in a second. Okay, what else? Package and deliver? Okay. Yeah, I'm just taking notes right now. We'll order in a second. And I think this is the way to go about this within your team, right? Think about everything you have to do. Any of these tools, I don't work right into a house of quality. I don't work right on a spec sheet. I don't work right into a function tree chart of functions, right? I do text files like this. Sort them, order them, particularly the first time through, then put them into the final form. And then after revisions after that, you can work with the final form. This is a bit freer way to think about things, I think. Okay. What else we got for that kind of high level, first level of sub-functions? What's that? Interact with what? Interact with the world. Maybe everything within the office, since we said it has to deliver coffee in the office. Okay. What do you mean by that?
Well, I ordered my coffee at 5:01 and someone else ordered their coffee at 5:02.
Okay, what's the function for that?
Well, I would probably get my coffee at 5:01 earlier than the person that ordered their coffee.
Sure, I get what you're saying. What's the function, though? What do you have to do?
Make a order list? Track task,
maybe track order. Track order, time, sequence, or something like that. Sequence, right? But that's also something that, you know, as you're describing, something that probably is a spec for this thing, you know, in terms of delivery times and, you know, deliver within X minutes of order, something like that. Oops. Any other ones you guys think are high-level sub-functions before we kind of discuss these in aggregate?
Like power, like charging, like
okay. Okay. Maintain self, maybe, for now. So I have to be able to charge my batteries. I have to monitor coffee supplies. If I'm considering all that myself, my system, right? We'll get, and again, we're going to refine these, right? And I think that's what we mean by a kind of iterative process, and not that I have to make 14 house function trees, actually draw out 14 of them, but to think about each one of these things clearly and try to refine on each of the points as we're talking about discussing it, okay? So let's think about these. Take coffee order. I think that's a probably not a bad high-level sub-function, right? Brew coffee. What do we think about that one? Yeah, so we said that it don't have to be a just brew coffee, right? We're taking all kinds of coffee shop-like drinks. Right? So actually brewing the coffee is a small part of making one of those drinks, right? So brew coffee, I think, ends up being some lower level subfunction under make drink. Okay. We'll stick with that for now. Okay. So while we're under make drink, what are the other steps under make drink beyond brew coffee?
Get water.
Probably. Get drink cup, maybe.
Mix ingredients,
maybe.
You need to recognize ingredients?
Yeah, recognize them and portion them out.
I don't know why I'm capitalizing stuff randomly. What else?
Portion ingredients.
Sure. How do I know about what those ingredients are or how I should portion them?
Recipes.
I probably need to know something about recipes, right? So, and maybe maintain a set end up being different functions. I don't know. What else goes into making the drink? Something to do with water.
Have like special tools to make the different drinks too, so.
Okay, sure. So I need to, I think that falls maybe under portion ingredients, decide portion sizes for everything. Okay, so now let's look at this subfunction. All these ones we just came up with, and there are probably more even, just kind of thinking about, are all those at the same level of complexity? Not really, right? So that's the next step of kind of thing, yes, sir. Okay. Okay. I think that's one path forward. Sure. How about within even this subsection that I have kind of three hashes? Are even those that which we have kind of indicating are subfunctions of make drink, are even those, all of those at the same level? Not really, right? So then that's kind of the next step of our process in thinking through this, right? We kind of, what are all the things I need to do to make a drink? And generally, I'll do exactly what we just did. Just list all the things I can think of that it's going to take to make a coffee-based drink, whether it's just a brew coffee or a frappuccino or whatever somebody orders. Okay, then I go back and look at them. Okay, are all these really clear? Are they grouped the right way? Are actually some of these subfunctions of another one? Okay, so go down that path for this, and you end up with lower-level functions, and you can start filling in, did I really get everything in order to make that process happen? Okay. And there's really more. I think one way to order it, this function tree, and start getting at some order is this maybe three high-level things. I have to be able to take the order, I have to be able to make the drink in some way, I have to be able to deliver the drink in some way. But that may not be the only way to order these things, right? And that's probably going to be, at least for you guys, you've had kind of textbook-style problems for most of your career until now. This design stuff, there's no one answer to any of it, right? And that includes the tools, right? There are proper ways to do the tools and utilize the tools within the framework of what you're thinking for the process, right? But just because you pick those three subfunctions and someone else say, I actually have four initial subfunctions, that doesn't mean one of you is right and one's wrong. Right? Remember, if someone else decides, hey, returning to the coffee brewing station is a really important subfunction. Right? That's a fourth one. I think that probably makes sense too. Right? One's taking the coffee there, I gotta get back. Right? And neither one of those is wrong. Right? What we're really looking for is clarity of thought in this process. Okay. What time we got? I want to think just for a second about one more. That is, take the coffee order. What are subfunctions there? We said that was one of our major high-level subfunctions. Understanding language, maybe.
Identifying a customer. Receiving input.
Saving the info.
What's that? What's that?
Prompt in order, like get like the customer is like you like push on a screen or ask what they want.
Sure.
Order input, yeah.
Could you go a different route?
Does any of this stuff say that it has to be a person listening to right? Any of these things are just as an app, right, would satisfy these just as well as a humanoid robot standing there would, right? And that's what we mean about solution neutral, right? There are a lot of different ways. We could have a touchscreen little thing where it has to order. It could be an app. It could be a humanoid robot standing there that's actually conversing with the person. Those ideas, those solutions all would satisfy the same set of functions. Same set of functions. So we say these functions are solution neutral. Yes, sir. That's correct. Every function on this tree, on this function tree, has to be solution neutral. That's what we say. Okay. Okay. And we want them solution neutral. When we talk about getting down to come on. And we want to get down to really, really low level subfunctions that where they're truly easy to design for, because we want to be able to come up with a bunch of different ideas to solve that. And what we're going to do is take that lowest level of subfunctions that we eventually get to in that function tree. The move forward, move right, move left, move backwards. Where I can come up with 10 things right off the top of my head how to solve it. Right? Those lowest level of subfunctions we're going to put in the leftmost column of this design tool called the morphological chart. Okay. So this list is all an entire list of subfunctions. Lowest level you get to. The ones that are kind of trivially easy to design for. And then for each one of those subfunctions, we've said we want to get to a place where we can come up with a bunch of ideas right off the top of our head. We're going to list those across. Right? In the book, they have a morphological chart that has like just three ideas. If you have just three ideas, you're either not doing a really good job of thinking of ideas, or that's an indication this subfunction may be too high level. It's not simple enough for you to rattle off 10 or 12 ways. Okay? So you want, for each one of those really low level subfunctions, again, a bunch of ideas across here and across every subfunction. Okay. Again, those are the lowest level ones in that function tree. Right. We know these are functions that any design we're going to come up with has to satisfy. So then we can take all the different ideas for each one of those low-level subfunctions. Right. We want each of them to be a little tiny sketch. It can be clip art, for example. That's a pretty popular way to do this. Okay. You don't want words. A big table of words is hard for us to parse. I can't look at a big table of words and get a lot of information out of it really quickly without going line by line and reading. That's why we want to use sketches here. Okay. That's why we use symbols in the House of Quality rather than putting 139 there. I can look at that and get some visual feedback on what's going on. I'm going to take those, and I might say, well, I'm looking at this table, and I have a table of nice clip art sketches. And you can look through now and start trying to piece together, how am I going to do each one of those things? How are they going to interact with one another? Right? So visual representation. I'm going to do each one of these simple things. If I piece them together this way, I'm going to come up with what I think is a good idea for the overall design. Right? So you might do something like that, right, where, hey, I think the first idea for subfunction 1 is working, and then the third idea for this one, and piece it together like that. And then if you do all those things, right, if you've done your job on the function tree, we've said the lowest level functions there mean if we satisfy all those things, we satisfy the main product function. Right? Then if we take and do all these ideas, we piece them together, we have a design then that satisfies the main product function. Okay. Yes, sir? No, so I'm saying in this case, I'm going to take idea 1 to solve this subfunction, and I'm going to say, idea 3 for subfunction 2, maybe it works. Seems like it works well with subfunction 1. Okay, and then idea 2 on subfunction 3 seems like it would work together with those two. Right, and that line, you wouldn't draw this line really, but it gives you an idea. Okay, I'm going to piece together all these various little subfunctions, and that's going to give me a total design, right? And allow you to see, these are going to be kind of synergistic combinations. Or similarly, if I use idea 1 here, that means that those idea 1s here is not going to work alongside that. So I have to avoid that block if I'm choosing that. And you can see that, and that's why you put the drawings in there. And you have N ideas across, right? And M different sub functions, you have a huge number of combinations of different alternative designs. That if you do all the subfunctions there, you're satisfying the overall chosen design, right? So it gives us, an objective, explicit way to get to alternative designs to fulfill our main product functionality, right? Rather than designing from just our gut and feeling. Okay. Questions about the morph chart? This is where we start getting to actual conceptual designs. Those combinations. Okay. Let's talk about those. Talk about the alternative designs. They have to satisfy, in terms of this procedure, the same customer requirements, the same set of specs, the same set of functions. We don't want to have alternative designs. Hey, this one's for this customer, and that one's for this type of customer. Those are two separate design processes. Okay, and you may do that within your company, but you should think of those as two separate designs. Right? We're going to mess with some, we're going to do a mechanical section of a $6 electric toothbrush in a couple weeks. That's a different product than a $120 electric toothbrush. Right? Those are different customers. So when we're thinking about design, we have to have designs, and all the alternative concepts have to satisfy the same customer requirements, same specs, same functions. And therefore, are evaluated against the same customer requirements, specs, and functions. Okay. Makes common sense, hopefully, or is some common sense. Basically, we want many different designs that are unique, that are true alternatives, that are all really good. Okay. We want picking a final design to be kind of hard. Right. If you get to the process, you're working through this process, and there's one clear winner and all the other ones you think are terrible, I think that's a good indication you haven't done a good job in the design process. Right. You should have 3 or 4 or 6 or 8, depending on the length of your project and the scope of your project, designs that you think are going to work at this conceptual design phase. So then that begs the question, well, if I have this 6 or 8 or whatever really good designs, how do I actually pick which one to maybe move forward with into detailed design? Or how do I down select to 3 to move into detailed design with? Okay. So what should we choose? Well, luckily we have some tools to help us do that. This is our problem understanding form. And we said really early on that all these things, and we're going to work really hard to understand our customer and what they think a successful product needs to be, and what they want from a product in order to be successful in their mind. We worked really hard to figure those out, and so they're unambiguous. We're going to use those to evaluate our design. Okay, so you're going to pick off those customer requirements from your latest version of your house of quality. We're going to drop them into an evaluation matrix. Okay, so took that customer requirements right out of my house of quality. Pow, right there. Should match 1 for 1. Okay, this is what we call a first level evaluation matrix. Okay. Talked about these matrices. They are part of the design process. So this is one we might use kind of early on in the process to help us kind of identify weaknesses and strengths in our alternative designs before we can kind of refine them further. What direction should we refine? What things seem to be addressing customer requirements in a nice way? So we have the customer requirements on the left-hand side. We're going to list our alternative, actually small drawings of our internal concepts across the horizontal top row, and then we'll evaluate them against those customer requirements in the middle. So let's walk through that pretty quickly. Let's look at dessert. So for the first level matrix, you're going to choose what we call a datum, which is kind of the benchmark problem, the benchmark solution. Right? If you're designing a smartphone, you might put the iPhone there, or Samsung Note, whatever, that catches fire. All right. So ice cream is datum. And then for each alternative design, right, you're going to look at a customer requirement, look at the alternative, and say, is it better, worse, or the same as my datum, as my benchmark? And depending on what that customer requirement is, you know, you fill it out. Right. You know what the table looks like that. But much larger, because you're going to have a ton more customer requirements than this little short list. Okay. Again, a lot of the utility here is thinking really clearly about why is this a plus? Why is it the same? But of course, we can get some numbers out at the bottom if we want. Of course, we can add up the pluses maybe, add up the minuses. How many categories, customer requirements, was it the same as the datum in? Right. We can get some numbers out. Right. I think there's much, much more utility in why is this a plus, why is that a minus, and you arguing among your group for why it's a plus or minus. Yes, sir. These are total designs, right? And by it being a viable alternative, you've said that it satisfies all the specs. Okay. If it doesn't satisfy the specs, it doesn't belong here. It's not a viable design at all.
But I mean, like, in some areas, like, let's say it had better, like, longer, like, battery life or something like that.
Well, if you're talking battery life, if that's deriving your design, there's probably a customer requirement here that's long battery life. So this is the first level matrix, and you can,
Should the importance of each requirement be included on?
That's a good point. Hang on to that for just a second. So, what are some weaknesses? The first level evaluation matrix is not considering the importance of those customer requirements or not. Good shot. Good look. But because basically this is kind of coming early on in the process, maybe the first or second or third time through the iterative loop you're taking through this process. All right. And you're trying to look at kind of high-level concepts, rough concepts. Okay, how are these working? How are things grouping together and satisfying the customer needs? It also doesn't indicate, you know, we're just saying better or worse. We're not kind of indicative of how much better or worse it is than that data. So there's some real kind of weaknesses here. If we were going to use this to select a design, those are real weaknesses. But we're not using this to select a design. We're using this to inform improving each one of those concepts. This evaluation matrix is part of the design process. It's not the end of it. So we can move on, though, to a second level evaluation matrix. And we can address one of those points. Right? And basically, we're gonna, instead of comparing each one against the data, we're going to give each design, alternative design, some kind of score. Which brings up the question of what scale should we use if we're going to give it a score? Right? What scale do we use? I don't know. But your team has to be explicit about what your scale is. Okay. A second level evaluation matrix, you'll often see 0 to 4. And what you're saying by choosing a scale like this is I don't really have the resolution to know between a 7.5 and an 8. But I can tell you between a 3 and a 4. Right? So having a 0 to 100 scale, you're saying I have a 1% difference resolution in my evaluation of a concept. Now, early on in the design process, you probably don't. Right? So that's why you'll see on second level matrix, you'll see 0 to 4 quite often. And you want to point this out. You need to point this out and make sure this is clear among your team as you're filling out these tools, right? So that 2 means the same to all of you. Okay? And you have to point this out to anyone you're describing this process to, what those teams mean. Get to the next level, which we'll see on the next slide. I might, later on in the design process, or maybe even later on in the design process on a second level matrix, I might be more confident in my ability to evaluate these concepts. I've done more engineering analysis. Right, I have more analysis and simulation to back up which one of these is better and why. So my evaluation scale can be a finer grain. Okay, so we march through, and as you might expect, we fill in a bunch of numbers and evaluate each one of these designs. And we're choosing 0 to 4 here for each one of my customer requirements. Of course, I can get some numbers. I can add those up, get absolute totals, and I can get some kind of relative total as well. So I can take what was the maximum possible score, right? And I can get some kind of percentage, like an exam score, effectively, right? So in this case, vanilla ice cream is only satisfying, 40% of the customer requirements that an ideal, perfect dessert would. There's one way to think about that number. So you can look at these numbers and say, hey, right now, that chocolate chip cookie is looking pretty good as a design choice. And what you want to do because it's part of the design process, you want to look, okay, well, where is the chocolate chip cookie doing better than the other designs? And what's driving it being the best design here? And like, hey, look, so this customer requirement, the chocolate chip cookie is way better than pretty much any of the other ones. Why is that? Could I steal whatever quality of the chocolate chip cookie that makes it a 4 here and the other one so low and apply that to a candy bar? So that's how these evaluation matrices are part of the process. You can get these scores, you can do the evaluation, and then look at comparing one design to another in a really objective way. And know what to pick off and steal from one design and use it on another. Yes, sir?
Should your data be like an ideal product?
Not necessarily. Okay. So it can be a benchmark, like the market leader. It could be what the previous generation of your company's product, right? So, iPhone 10 and I'm designing the next iPhone, right, or whatever. Okay, we want to compare it against that and make sure we're better than that in as many ways as possible, or whatever. I see a hand for a question. Okay, what's missing in this one?
Importance.
Yeah, we still don't have importance yet for those specs. For each customer requirement. So the third level evaluation matrix just adds that. Okay, and we do the similar thing where we take each customer requirement, look at each alternative design, which hopefully is better than the one we did in the second level evaluation matrix. We're further along in the process now. Okay, we have to pick a scale to use. You'll see very often a 0 to 10 used now because third level matrix tends to come later in the process. You have more information, you can done more engineering analysis, you can make a more precise measure of how well it's satisfying a customer requirement. And then as you might expect, we go through and fill out numbers. Okay. Then we add up the total. The absolute total works like the house of quality, basically, right? It's kind of a weighted, weighted average. So we do 5 times 7 plus 6 times 0 times plus 9 times 3 plus 2 times 5 plus 1 times 6, and that goes there. And we can do that for each column. That's going to give us our absolute total for that column. Okay. And then again, we can do the relative total to do kind of an exam score style percentage of perfect, if you will. And we can get this. And you see that, you know, we haven't done what we should and go back and revise these designs and make them better based on earlier evaluations, but you start including the importance and, hey, the strawberry is much better now. But even when we get to this third level evaluation matrix, I can look at this and, well, what is the strawberry doing really well at that's causing it to win? Can I take that idea and use it on one of my other designs? So we're not necessarily done when we get to an evaluation matrix. Okay. Yes, sir?
Strawberry may have one right edge, but even though it's your lowest customer requirement, it's going to zero that edge.
Sure.
How does that affect things?
I think it's okay. Right? Because we're looking at the product as a whole. Right? If this, what we're saying by this being only a really low importance to my customer is they don't really care about that much. Right? So the fact that we're not doing really well at it doesn't really hurt my customer's impression of my product. Right? If this was a 9 and you got a 0, then you probably should rethink it, even if it is the highest score. Right? But that's the kind of things you want to look for. Right? Oh, I got a really low score here. What is that important customer requirement? Can I take what's good about the chocolate chip cookie for that particular customer requirement and apply it to my strawberry? So you want to look for these both ways. Yes, sir.
So what if it's a situation like he was pointing out, the one has a 0 for the strawberry, but what if by giving up that one with the one, that's what allowed it to produce the 9?
Exactly right. Exactly right. So that's why we're evaluating. There's kind of this, we don't really evaluate concept by concept. We're trying to look at the overall picture here. Right? So by being a 0 there, we might be able to be a 10 on the other one. So that's why we're looking at, we're not comparing subsystems here. We're comparing complete, full alternative designs. Right? So those compromises should be kind of baked into the design. And this is a way to kind of tease those out and evaluate those. In this case, we may look at this and say, I'm going to recommend that we move to detailed design with the strawberry. That's fine. You might get to that process eventually, right? But you want to remember, right, that strawberry is not the best because it got the highest score. Okay? It got the highest score because it's the best. Right? That's a small change of language, but I think it really, if you frame your discussion that way, and frame your thinking that way, it gets to closer to what we want to be doing here. Right? We're not going to blindly follow that it got a 0.7 and got the highest score there, and that's why we chose it. Right? What we want to do is, if we're doing our job in these tools, this is just a reflection of this being a really good design and the one we want to recommend. This is supporting our recommendation of the strawberry as the one we move to detail design with. Right? It's not the reason to do it. Yes?
So you're saying is ultimately you just pick which design you like the most and you can use this justification?
No, I'm not saying that at all. Not saying that at all. What I'm saying is don't blindly follow this number. And I think that goes in any engineering analysis in the rest of your career, even really technical engineering, not design stuff. Don't blindly just trust a number that some computer program spits out. That's my point I'm making. Right? Look at this. Does this 0.7 support our, you know, you've been working on this maybe for months. Does it support your feeling? Is it really different than your feeling? Okay, if it's really different than what you thought was going to be the best, why is that the case? Right? So, yeah, I'm not saying play with these numbers until your chosen design pops out. The one you really want to make is the one that pops out. No, you don't want to do that. That's unethical, fundamentally. Right? What you don't want to be a slave to this number. Okay. All right. So we already talked through all that. Okay. Questions about evaluation matrices? Okay. Yes, sir.
Since the third level is, I guess, the most accurate and takes the most into account, why would you still do the first two?
So the first two, the third level is the most accurate, most precise, takes the most into account, but it also requires you having the knowledge to be able to do that about your customer requirements, about the design. The design is developed enough to where you can make that precise of a judgment. So that requires some amount of effort. The earlier matrices can help you earlier on in the design process. If I have rough ideas, kind of rough ideas, if you will, I can put them into in a rough, early understanding of my problem. I can still get to the concept evaluation process, and that doing that evaluation can help you better understand your customer requirements, which then gets refined and maybe use a second level the next time through. So the earlier evaluation matrices, again, they're not design selection matrices, they're evaluation, they're part of the process. So they're also helping you learn about your customer, learn about your alternative designs, further refine your understanding of the problem.
So really, using the first two is the reason why the last one's probably as successful as it may be?
Yes. I think that's a good way to think about it.
Do you ever get tossed into like a loop of some kind where you're not really making any progress in the design?
That can happen, yeah. Yeah, I think be aware if that's happening to you and fight it.